Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Poor, and my guest today, he's a returning guest, actually. He's Assemblyman Sepulveda. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing your name
okay.
wrong. I'm sorry. So the Assemblyman is here today to talk about advocating the marijuana drug laws. And Assemblyman, tell our listeners what your position is and why you've come to that position.
Sure. First of all, I want to thank you, Cynthia, for having me on the show again.
My pleasure.
Yeah, it's always nice to be on the show and always good to see you. I finally got to meet you in person,
Thanks.
So that was a good thing. You know, we have marijuana drug laws in the state of New York that really aren't sensible and that disproportionately impact members of the minority community, Hispanic, African-American males, that are getting arrested and are getting convictions on low levels of marijuana possessions. And what happens is that these young men and women will then, for the rest of their lives, have a sort of scarlet letter that can impact their ability to, you know, to get jobs or to further their educational career, and then do something once they further the educational career. Now, even though there's a law in New York State that says that employers can't ask about convictions unless it's related to the job at hand, I mean, the reality is that many of these young men and women will have this record follow them for the rest of their lives. And so, you know, it's a major problem, and the problem is exacerbated because of the stop and frisk policy that we have, especially in the city of New York. And so we believe that when you decriminalize small amounts of marijuana possession, that then you will remedy part of the problem with the stop and frisk issue here in the city of New York.
When you say stop and frisk, do you think it targets minority youth rather than Caucasian?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, since 2001 or 2002, I believe there have been 4 million stop and frisks in the city of New York. Of that amount, 9 out of 10 of those persons that are stop and frisk are members of the minority community, specifically the Latino and African-American community. And so when you think about, you know, statistics show that only about 33% of the users of marijuana are men, African-American men, Hispanic men, yet 90% of them are the ones that are being stopped, then I think the statistics tell a telling story. And undoubtedly, there's no doubt in my mind that for lack of a better term, the racial profiling that happens with that stop and frisk is pretty self-evident.
Now, who initiated stop and frisk? Was it Bloomberg?
It's been around for some time, but it's been taken to an extreme level since the Bloomberg administration, and more specifically under the Commissioner Ray Kelly's administration. So, you know, I think the current problems that exist occur under the Bloomberg administration. And so, you know, you have a police commissioner here that I believe has been relatively insensitive to communities of color. And there's a bad relationship. And part of the bad relationship is a result of the stop and frisk policy of the NYPD in the city of New York. Look, as an elected official, I don't want to tie the hands of the police department to have effective policing. But, you know, there's something called the Constitution of the United States, and there's something called the Constitution of the City of New York, of the State of New York. And, you know, you can't violate people's constitutional rights no matter what policy you're trying to implement in terms of police protection and public safety. And there are ways of accomplishing both without it unfairly targeting young men and women of color, and especially those that live in my community.
When a cop does a stop and frisk, are they looking for drugs, or are they looking for guns, or are they looking for both?
Well, I mean, you know, you have to have the standard of proof is that you have to have reasonable suspicion to stop a person and ask them a question. And then to arrest, you have to have probable cause that the person has committed a crime. So what is reasonable suspicion? Unfortunately, that's – how do you specifically define that? It's very difficult. So that is why I believe that police officers can always create a reason to say that it was suspicion. And so when you have a young man, you know, of color that is walking in a neighborhood that maybe the policeman doesn't think should be in that neighborhood. You know, I've walked in predominantly white neighborhoods, and I've gotten pulled over or questioned by police officers who've told me, you don't look like you belong in this neighborhood. Now, if it happens to me, you know, a person who's never committed a crime, I'm an attorney, I am a representative of the community, it happens a lot more often to these young men. And so what's the reasonable suspicion that you're dark-skinned and you're walking in a white neighborhood? I mean, we don't know exactly what they're looking for, but they use the term reasonable suspicion too freely. And so then they implement these stop and frisks and justify it with whatever they believe is the reasonable suspicion. You know, you can't just say, oh, well, there's a person, let me stop and frisk them. And that's generally speaking, when it comes to members of our community, young men and women, that's generally the reality of what happens.
Aren't there a lot of young women who are subjected to this?
You know, it's not as big a problem as it is with young men, but there are situations where young women are pulled over. And again, the statistics show that overwhelmingly they are young women of color. So, you know, if you see that it's consistent based on where you are, what you look like, then obviously there's a problem with the policy of stop and frisk.
Now, does the NYPD target, they primarily target younger people, but are there older people, let's say 40, 50, and 60 years old, who are subjected to stop and frisk?
Well, you know, I'm sure there has been. There have been complaints with the Civilian Complaint Review Board. But the problem overwhelmingly exists with young men in their, you know, teenage years till prior to 30 years. That's where the problem majority exists. And so that's what we have to really work on creating this environment where stop and frisk is used constitutionally. We don't get a lot of complaints from the older community. We get most of the complaints from young men.
So if there was a lesser amount of stop and frisk, then it would not populate the jails as much as it does now. Am I correct?
That's, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, with a smaller amount, it's more like a traffic violation, a traffic ticket. You know, you don't have young men and women going to prison. And generally speaking, employers, institutions don't really look to violations. But when it's a misdemeanor, then you have a problem. And it precludes you from getting certain jobs.
Now
legally, you shouldn't, but it does.
You advocate the legalization of marijuana.
I advocate the legalization of small amounts of marijuana. You know, I don't want somebody walking around the city of New York with, you know, a pound of marijuana in their bag. But, you know, and for me, the advocacy is more premised on the fact that, you know, as young men and women, we all commit mistakes. We all do things that are stupid because essentially we're young men and women. And so.
Right.
And then the issue is that, you know, I, as a college student, where the population was predominantly white, a lot of the kids there were using marijuana. They were using harder drugs. They were using cocaine. But they weren't getting arrested. They weren't getting targeted because they're in a university. But these other kids that are in our communities that aren't going to college, obviously, they get targeted, they get arrested, and so for basically committing the same stupid act, you have desperate treatment between one community and another community, and so that's why I believe that low levels of marijuana should be a violation and not a misdemeanor. And again, I want to make it clear, I don't advocate the use of drugs, and I don't advocate the use of having or having a large amount of marijuana on your person. I don't advocate the selling of marijuana as a way of making a living. But with small amounts of marijuana, it's ridiculous. It's expensive. It's not cost effective, and we can devote those resources to the more bigger problems with crime and bigger problems with societal issues, social issues. We can devote the funds, the money, to tackle more important things than people who are walking around with small amounts of marijuana.
One of the arguments over the years is why the legislators have not advocated the legalization of small amounts is because they don't want to be seen as soft on crime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons that I believe that the Rockefeller drug laws are still in effect like they were when Nelson Rockefeller was governor. Am I correct?
I mean, sure. A lot of people, especially members that are a bit on the conservative side, feel that's the justification. I mean, you know, this began during the Reagan administration with the conservative movement. So, yeah, they don't want to appear soft on crime, which, you know, the whole concept of soft on crime, and what does that mean? I mean, what does that mean? Soft on crime.
Right.
I mean, if you put somebody in jail for having, you know, half an ounce of marijuana in their possession or a couple of grams, does that make the person soft on crime? You know, it's a concept that I really have never understood. You have drug laws that apply to, you know, people who are walking around with cocaine or heroin. You know, deal with them swiftly. I have no problem with that. But, you know, the small amounts of marijuana to me is almost equivalent to someone walking around with a bottle of vodka in their pocket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not, you're not hurting. It's an inconsistency because you're not really, you're hurting only yourself, generally speaking, when you're using marijuana. You know, the other argument is that you start with marijuana and then you gravitate to harder drugs.
Right.
But I haven't seen any kind of empirical evidence that proves to me that that's the case. It's a twofold argument. It's about protecting our young kids from unfair stop and frisk, and also devoting our resources with a smart drug policy in the state of New York, devoting our resources to areas where we need more money and we should be focusing more on.
Is the legislation right now in the assembly to legalize marijuana?
Well, we have Assemblyman Kimara has sponsored a bill to legalize small amounts of marijuana. We believe it's going to be a one house bill. I've joined myself and other colleagues, especially those from downstate, have joined as co-sponsors to the bill. You know, we attempted to get some of this previously. There was an offer made that they would allow small amounts to be legalized in the city of New York, but the rest of the state would not have the same privilege. And most of the African American, Latino, minority legislators in the assembly said, no, this targets all of our young men and women. You know, it's Rochester, Syracuse, those kinds of cities also have these problems. And so we believe that we have to stand together and protect our young men and women throughout the state. And so we said that's not good enough. We want the entire state to have the same protection as the city of New York.
I had read recently where Governor Cuomo is even against medical marijuana. What's your feeling about that?
I'm in favor of it. Assemblyman Dick Gottfried has introduced a bill for medical use of marijuana, and he's got many co-sponsors on that bill, including myself. You know, I have relatives that are suffering from cancer. I have a cousin who had breast cancer, and you know, with the chemotherapy, there's a loss of appetite, there's pain, and a sense of relief to her, or relief to her was, a pain relief to her was, she was able to use marijuana, and it helped her appetite and helped her get through the ordeal. And you hear many stories like that of people that are suffering, suffering from cancer and are getting chemotherapy, and I believe people with glaucoma. So, you know, when you have this remedy and you're not hurting anyone, you're in the privacy of your home, then why not use everything that relieves people of pain, and helps people with these dreadful diseases? Why not use it for those purposes? I understand at least of all why are people opposed to that when it's, you know, it's medicinal. It's not recreational.
Now, this is your first term, correct?
Yes, it is.
Now, do you have you been surprised by anything that has gone on in the legislature, or everything that you expected is just how it's going?
Well, you know, there's several things we can touch on. The first thing is that I'm pleasantly surprised at how, generally speaking, even though in light of the recent corruption arrests in the Assembly and Senate, generally speaking, the members of the Assembly are hard-working family people who sacrifice so much to be in the Assembly. They sacrifice times with their family, and they are generally good-hearted people who are trying to do their best. The congeniality, the camaraderie between both members of the aisles. I mean, I've developed good friendships with both members of the Republican Conference and the Democratic Conference. You don't have that kind of discord that you normally think about in public between both parties. The willingness of members of both aisles to help each other. You know, I've gotten help from my Republican colleagues just as much as my Democratic colleagues. That was a pleasant surprise. And the willingness of everyone to help you, you know, get yourself started. You know, I got help with legislation in the process and learning how to advocate for your bills in a more effective way. So that's been a pleasant surprise. You know, the budget was a little disappointing for us. You know, I was a strong advocate for the DREAM Act, and that was rejected by Scalos and the Republicans. And we're going to continue that fight. That was disheartening. But generally speaking, I'm pleasantly surprised by the experience that I'm having, and I'm very happy with the colleagues who are, you know, you read about this nonsense with corruption, and I mean, you know, it's corruption is a microcosm of society. And when you have 150 members and you have a couple of bad apples, that's not a bad ratio. These are hardworking people that sacrifice a lot to look after the best interests of their communities and the state of New York.
When somebody sees or reads the paper or hears on the news about somebody who has engaged in some kind of corruption, it further, you know, it further their thoughts, you know, okay, look at that. That's what I've been thinking all along. It cements that thought even further. What would you say to people to, you know, to dispel those notions?
Well, look, I mean, it's magnified because of the media coverage. But, you know, look at the number of legislators you've had, you know, over the last 5 years, and look at the number have been convicted of corruption. And I don't mean, for example, Senator Hiram Montserrat, his conviction was based on physical abuse of his girlfriend. You know, it was, I believe, an assault. That wasn't a bribery charge, although other things have surfaced since. And you look and you add up the numbers vis-a-vis the percentage in society, and you'll see that the percentages are not that much different. Look, these people are there 3, sometimes 4 days a week. Many of them, you know, I'm fortunate. I bring my wife and my baby with me to session. But, you know, many of them can't because they have their children in school. Mine is a year and a half old, so I don't have the same dilemma. But these people are hardworking people, and they sacrifice a lot. And you know, in the overall scheme, they don't make a lot of money. Some of them have to give up their careers or put their careers on hold. And, you know, yeah, you can say, well, they knew that getting into it. But let's not diminish the fact that they are sacrificing an enormous amount of work, an enormous amount of family time to be legislators and legislate on behalf of their communities.
There's been initiatives to create a full-time legislature where the legislators receive more money. How do you feel about a full-time legislature?
Well, we are full-time legislators already. I mean, you know, according to the Constitution of the State of New York, we're part-time employees, but our work is full-time. When we're not up in session, we are down in our districts. You know, I can tell you that when I come down on Thursdays or Fridays, my calendar is packed with constituents that want to meet with me, with community groups that want to meet with me, with events that I have to attend. It's a 24-hour endeavor, 7 days a week. It's not just part-time. So if you're going to essentially make it a full-time position, it doesn't really change anything because we're already full-time. I'd have no problem with that.
In the few minutes that we have left, is there anything that I have neglected to ask you as far as the drug laws are concerned?
No. What I'd like for the people who listen to your program is to contact their legislators. And, you know, if you have testimonials, if you have compelling stories, you know, parents, young men and women that are now older, who have stories about, I'm sorry, when they were younger, and how a possession charge of marijuana, small amounts, how it impacted their lives. You know, write to the governor, write to the head of the independent conference, Senator Klein, write to Senator Scalos, and the head of the Democratic conference, Senator Stuart Cousins, and tell them that that you're in favor of this and make a big push so that we can have a more sensible drug policy and drug laws in the state of New York.
If any of your constituents would want to reach you, but they don't know how,
sure,
how would they do so?
The easiest way is to call my office at 718-931-2620. Every assembly person in the state of New York has a website in the New York State Assembly, so you can email us at the website. I'm proud to say that I'm every single email that I get, I personally respond to, not a staffer. So you'll get a personalized direct response. Or you can call us at our assembly office upstate at 518-455-5064.
Okay, thank you so much for taking the time to be interviewed, and thank you everyone for listening to Focus on Albany. There will be more shows coming up. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you so much, Steph.